Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. This is a weekly sports podcast. We call it the best couple of hours of your sports week. I am your host, 12 Kyle. Once again, this is Dead End Sports. We want to thank you for listening, downloading, subscribing to our podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you do that. As I mentioned, this is a weekly sports podcast. So we're going to give you our sports takes on what has happened over this past week. Of course, I will not be doing this podcast alone. Joining me tonight is the homie Ken. Ken, what's up, man?
Everything's good, man. We just wrapped up Halloween. If you guys can hear that in the background, that's everybody still hanging over, drinking and eating food. We grill, we have salad. It's like a community. People bring all kind of food, and there's almost like a party afterwards. It's kind of crazy. So I've been out there cussing out the big kids, coming through asking for candy, telling them to skip my house next year, and that they're too big to be trick-or-treating.
And let me go on record, ladies and gentlemen, by saying that Ken did not invite us over.
It's for the kids.
Hey, our boy B is not going to be with us on this podcast, but filling in for B, man, is a local. I can't even call him local. He is a usual suspect around here. The homie Q to Six Man. Q, what up, man?
What's going on, everybody? Just filling in for Detroit player, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I got to do what I got to do. So
when we go to the bullpen, he's always ready. He's always ready. And the homie FIFO should be joining us momentarily. As I mentioned at the top, man, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So let's start there, man. Q, I'll start with you. This past week, as far as college football, baseball, basketball, NFL, just give us some things that stood out to you over this past week.
Right. Giannis starting off. I remember when you and FIFA were going back and forth about if Giannis is an MVP candidate and whatnot. And I think he's basically solidifying his start to his campaign. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he keeps this workload up. I think he's averaging like 30 points and like damn near what 9 rebounds and like what 6 assists. Like it's crazy. His production is incredible. And just think about what he'll be in year 6 or 7 and think about what he'll be when he finally has competent second option. Not to, you know, go in on, you know, Brogdon or throw shade at guys like Jabari Parker, but it's kind of hard to, you know, compete for a championship when your second best player is Greg Monroe. And, you know, it's not really, you know, the ideal situation for him. But regardless of all that, dude's been balling. So that's what I'm looking at right now. Ben Simmons, as a Sixers fan, he's exceeding my expectations. Really enjoying what I'm seeing from him. Being able to get to exactly where he wants to on the floor is really what I was looking for. And he's kind of added on top of that with trying to mix in a little bit more of a jumper. Regardless of if the form is ugly or not, they're starting to fall. And if he's comfortable taking an ugly jump shot that just happens to fall, then he might just have one of those Sean Marion jump shots that just works for him. So it's cool with me. Joel Embiid is healthy, so we can always pray for that. And the Sixers are, I think we're 3-5 right now, so we're doing pretty good. Really excited about that. Golden State looks kind of shaky. I'm keeping an eye on that. And finally, I would probably say that my Eagles are in the running for looking like one of the best teams in the NFL. But I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I'm not going to say Super Bowl confirmed, and I'm not going to say playoffs confirmed either, because we did lose Jason Peters. We did lose our middle linebacker, and we're going to get our starting cornerback from injury. He'll be back probably by the Dallas game after the bye week. So we've got to keep putting that work in, keeping our heads down and just going to work. And if all else goes, we will be in the playoffs. But, yeah, this is to keep it one game at a time, and you got to keep Carson Wentz up because Jason Peters is an all-pro left tackle, and you just can't really replace that overnight. So we'll see. And I like the acquisition that we got, but we'll talk about that later on.
Okay. Ken, what about you, man? This past week, man, what stood out as far as college, Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL?
Yeah, man. I think for me, it's a shame that I that Deshaun Watson is showing out the way he is, and I can't even watch it because of my protest of the NFL this year until things resolve. So, but yeah, it's great seeing him perform, and I think he'll keep it up. We all knew that guy was special, and he's just showing it to everybody else out there right now. So so yeah, that was dope. I think the Cavs, obviously, that's the story, but we'll see what's going to go with that. Q already mentioned Golden State. I like what I'm seeing from Ben Simmons. Yeah, he just makes the game look easy. It's kind of crazy. But I think the one thing that I do want to highlight that stood out the most was just that game between Ohio State and Penn State last Saturday, man. It was such a phenomenal game, man, and Ohio State was getting shellacked. Like, they couldn't get anything going. They were down 21-3, and all of a sudden, man, like, when the pressure was on, they just took off, and they just – Penn State couldn't stop them. And I thought that this was actually going to be the big win that James Franklin needed to finally get over the hump of beating Ohio State. And just like last year, you up double digits in the fourth quarter, and you can't close. But I got to give all kind of credit to JT Barrett for just the way he ended that game. 13 for 13, 170 yards, and 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. And the other thing that people are not talking about it are highlighting is the defensive line, because they got to McCorley and on those last couple of drives, and they got him off the field. I mean, they couldn't do anything to stop those guys, so they deserve a lot of praise as well, because they basically won the game. They had a little over a minute and 30 seconds left on the field, and they were only down by a point. So a field goal wins it. So without them, they would have lost that game. So Ohio State is back in the running, and they should definitely be one of the final four teams to play for a championship.
True indeed. Good points by both you and Q. let's see. What stood out to me? Well, first and foremost, college football-wise, the – rankings were released as far as the playoff, college football playoff rankings. We got Georgia coming in at number 1, Alabama at 2, Notre Dame at 3, Clemson at 4, followed by Oklahoma at 5, and then Ohio State at 6. No surprise there. I guess it's a little surprise because I did not anticipate Georgia being over Alabama, because Alabama seems to have run roughshod over everybody that they've played. Obviously, if they continue on this pace, Georgia and Alabama will play each other in the SEC championship game. So that's interesting right there. And I think, you know, personally, I don't trust Notre Dame. But, you know, other than the loss to Georgia, they beat everybody that you put in front of them. So I'm interested to see how this plays out. Also in college, Jim McElwain from the Florida Gators, they got him up out the paint. Florida fired their head coach this past weekend after they got shellacked by Georgia. Not really much to say there. I hate Florida. Always have. I'm a Florida State fan, so I hate Florida. Jim McElwain, I knew Jim McElwain was in trouble when he took that picture naked of him humping a dead shark this summer and then tried to deny and say it wasn't him. I don't know what kind of man takes a picture naked of, you know, of himself naked humping a dead shark, but, I mean, maybe he's into weird shit. I don't know. Nonetheless, you know, McElwain fell out of favor with a lot of Florida fans, obviously with the losses. But, you know, just a few weeks ago, he, you know, told reporters that he and his team had received death threats. And then obviously, you know, that's not something that you, you know, take lightly, especially in these days and times. And, you know, the school did some investigation and come to find out there were no death threats whatsoever. So it's likely that, you know, the buyout that Jim McElwain has could be waived and he could be fired with cause. And not get any of his money, you know, that is coming to him. So we'll see how that plays out. That may end up in court. But nonetheless, Jim McElwain is up out the paint. To the NFL, let's see what stood out these last couple of days. Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell is up for a contract extension. And it seems like the one guy that is standing in his way, or it seems hell-bent on standing in his way of getting that contract extension, is Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys. You know, this may or may not have something to do with Ezekiel Elliott's six-game suspension. I don't know. You know, just from the outside looking in, looks like Jerry's player-hating. I mean, it is. And in this most recent meeting that the NFL owners had with Roger Goodell, Roger Goodell actually took the side of the NFL players. So, you know, with all of this stuff going on, and Roger Goodell has really been out here taking bullets for these owners, you know, for him to side with the players, it's rubbing owners the wrong way. And Jerry Jones seems to, you know, be in the way of Roger Goodell getting his bread. So we'll see how that one plays out. What else? As I mentioned, Ezekiel Elliott is suspended again, or shall I say, for right now, he's suspended at the time of this recording. Who knows, between now and the time that you hear this podcast, they may go to court and have some other injunction, and Zeke may be suiting up on Sunday. I don't know. But as of right now, the six-game suspension is back in effect. Joe Flacco, a guy that Ken really doesn't like. Joe Flacco got laid out the other night by Kiko Alonso. I thought the hit was a dirty hit. I think Kiko Alonso knew damn well that Joe Flacco was sliding, and I think it was a dirty hit, and I thought he should have been thrown out of the game. I think the NFL should, you know, protect this play, particularly quarterbacks. I think you got to protect quarterbacks because, I mean, let's just keep it a buck, man. It's a lot of bad quarterbacks out here, so, you know, the ones who are halfway decent, we need to keep them in the game. Let's see. Also, basketball-wise, in the NBA – Q mentioned his 76ers. Can't talk about the Sixers without talking about Markelle Fultz. The number one pick has a bum shoulder. Reports were that he could not raise his arm above his head to shoot the basketball. And this is his shooting shoulder, his right shoulder. Speedy recovery. He is out indefinitely. So it looks like more bad luck for the Sixers as far as their number one picks are going. And on a sad note for me, man, Joe Girardi. As many of you know, I'm a Yankees fan. My man Joe Girardi, he is up out the paint. The Yankees will not extend him after 10 seasons in the Bronx. Personally, I like Joe. I understand why the team is going in a different direction, but I wasn't a fan of the move. Joe Girardi is leaving. And last but not least, man, something else that stood out to me. Actually, two more things. Q's Philadelphia Eagles, as he mentioned, right now 7-1. I did some research, and they had the third easiest schedule for the first half of the season. Now, in the second half of the season, they've got games against Dallas, Denver, Seattle, and the LA Rams. So it won't be easy, but sitting at 7-1, man, they are the surprise team of the season for me. And then basketball, NBA, one thing that stood out to me was two guys, actually. Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins. Let me drop some numbers on you guys, because they dropped numbers on us this past week. Through the season, so far, and through six games this season, the two of them are combining for an average of 57.7 points a game, 26.8 rebounds a game, 7.7 assists a game, and 4.1 blocks a game. And, you know, these two are only going to get better. And the scary part about it is they've only played 23 games together. So, you know, you combine this year with last year, it's only 23 games. I think, you know, the sky's the limit for what these two guys can do. You know, obviously they have to put more pieces around them, you know, to make a serious playoff run. But that duo right there, man, scary. Scary with a capital S. As we move on, let's talk about the World Series, which is currently going on right now at the time of this recording. The Houston Astros are up 3-2. It's currently right now in the, I think it's in the third inning with the Astros up 1-0. We'll keep an eye on that. So let's start right there. I'll start with you first, Q. Do you think that the Dodgers can force a game 7, or do you think the Astros are going to close it out in 6?
Yeah, I'm not even going to pretend like I'm like a baseball aficionado, but I do know that Clayton Kershaw is supposed to be this, like, you know, godlike pitch. I think he's a pitcher. And, it's not showing up, apparently. And, like, since game 2, I believe he hasn't been in his, I guess you could say, in his best form. Right. So it really just comes down to him and how the manager game plans. The Astros and the Dodgers were going back and forth heavy last game.
Yes.
I actually saw most of it. And it's funny, I feel so bad for that lady who had that ball taken from her in a historic game. I think the most home runs in a World Series game.
Yep.
And some dude just snatched it from her.
Did you hear the story though? The woman who had the home. Okay, just to give you guys a backdrop. There was a home run hit by the Dodgers. I can't remember which Dodger it was, but there's this thing in the Astros ballpark where the fans, if someone from an opposing team hits a home run, the fans throw the ball back on the field. Well, the home run gets hit, lady gets it, and she's happy. She's got the ball. She's showing it to the crowd, and she's there with her husband and her brother-in-law. The guy who took the ball from her was her brother-in-law. So her brother-in-law snatches the ball from her and throws it back on the field. Now she's happy just to get a souvenir. She doesn't know anything about this tradition about throwing the ball back on the field. And you could see, you know, her husband trying to stop him, but he just throws the ball back on the field. Man, can you imagine being at the game with your woman and then your brother does something like that? You know that dude, you know he heard it all the way home.
Dude, man, first off, you're not coming to Thanksgiving. You're not coming to Christmas. Matter of fact, you banned from the house for another 2 years. Yeah, man, that's like a souvenir. That's a record breaking game, and you just throw it back like for that reason, you know. But yeah, to answer your question, can they force another game? Yeah, they can. It's just, I think the Astros have all the momentum, man. Momentum is so real in sports, Kyle. And once you have a momentum on your side, you start hitting more. You feel more confident swinging. You feel more confident pitching. And the guys are just amped up, and they're ready to get this over with. So we see it how it is in basketball. We see it the same way that it is in NFL. And now we're seeing it now that a team like the Astros – who I think a lot of people, I think they were the Vegas underdog, if I'm not mistaken, Kyle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they came in.
So they came in as the underdog, and now they have the belief that they can beat this team. The Dodgers were supposed to be the prohibitive favorite of, oh, they have Kershaw, they have all these people, they should be able to win. But now that the momentum has swung and you win such a draining game like that last game, I don't think people really realize, for those who've never played sports, who've ever been into extra innings or been overtime, you don't really understand how draining it is to play your butt off and then lose a game like that. You know, that's like going to triple overtime in basketball and losing. And, like, you're just crushed because you're like, we put in all this effort. That's like going into, you know, the NFL and you go into overtime and you put up all these defensive stops and then you get beat on, like, a 60-yard field goal. It's like, how does that happen? You know, same thing with the extra innings last game. They kept going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until the Astros just got one and they won. So for the Dodgers, it's like, whew, now we got to refocus. Now we got to get back into our game plan, and we got to hope that we're swinging better than we were, you know, last game, which is hard because now you're like, how much better can we even be? And that was peak baseball right there, like that was peak World Series baseball. True. And I don't know if the Dodgers have it in them, man, but to give you a definitive answer, Kyle, I think they do have it in them. I do, and I think that it all comes down to Kershaw's shoulders, man. That's really what it is.
True indeed. They got a Hill throwing for him tonight, going up against Verlander, and Verlander's been cold because he hadn't lost a game since he signed with the Astros. So we'll keep you updated and posted as we're recording tonight. Ken, what about you, man? Do you think the Dodgers can push it to seven? Your boy Yasiel Puig has said he's guaranteeing a game seven. Of course, they have to win tonight. How do you think see this thing shaking out?
Well, right now they're down 1-0, and Verlander is locked in, so he better hit two home runs in order for that to happen, and hope the pitch will stick. For me, man, like, you know, if they lose this series, they lost it in game two. We're talking about terrible overmanaging. By Dave Roberts. Rich Hill is going, and he takes him out in the fourth inning. People have been talking about that, so I won't go into all of that if you've been following the World Series. But I think that that's the one that cost him. And you know, it's funny, Cowherd is hilarious because, you know, on one hand, coming into this, he was talking about, oh, you just throw everything out the window and it's the World Series and no rules apply. And then today or yesterday, he was talking about, oh, the analytics are killing the game. And, you know, when you got your guy going, you need to let him go. It's like, which one is it, Cowherd? Because the analytics were telling Dave Roberts to make all of those moves, the same thing that you were kind of agreeing with, because the rules don't apply in the postseason. But, you know, when you got the pitching staff that the Dodgers have and Rich Hill is pitching a good game, you don't take him out. You don't take Kershaw out. Yeah, Kershaw wasn't looking the best, but you don't take him out at that moment. Like, you got to rely on your guys. And, yeah, he had a 4-0 lead, and then they gave him a 7-4 lead, and he was in trouble. But he only needed one out. Mm-hmm. And you don't take out Kershaw, who is the Peyton Manning. I hate to even say that because I think it's so disrespectful. But the facts are the facts. He just doesn't pitch well in the postseason. And I know you play a limited number of games in the postseason. Right. And it can inflate your ERA. But when you have a 4-0 lead and you're Clayton Kershaw, you go 9. You go 9, you strike out 10 or 11. That's what you do. And he didn't. And when they give you a 7-4 lead and you blow that, and now by putting, I think it was 2 on or something like that, and then they took him out with one out, with him needing to get one out. Like, I would rather trust Kershaw to get that one out than Kente Madea. But nevertheless, man, they kept coming back. They kept coming back. And they just couldn't make it stick. And their bullpen is taxed. We're talking about, you bring in Morrow, pitched in 4 of the 5 games so far in the postseason, and you take a lead and you bring him back in the game. Mm-hmm. After he pitched the day before. Like, what are you doing? So Dave Roberts have cost them this World Series because the Dodgers offense have done their part. The pitching staff, at least some of the starting pitching, has played well, well enough to win. And then now you put yourself in a situation. So I think they will. I think they'll get to a Game 7 somehow. But they're going to have to get Verlander out of this game and get to that bullpen, mm-hmm, if they want a chance of winning. And unlike Dave Roberts, A.J. Hinch is going to let Verlander go as long as he can go. So, mm-hmm, you know, I want to see a Game 7, and I think they can, but I'm with Q, man. Like, I've been watching all of these games, and this is the highest scoring offense in baseball this year. And they're playing loose, they're playing confident, and they are not scared of anybody on that pitching staff, period, at all. They feel like they can touch anybody, and they have.
And so, they have, right.
Yeah, yeah. Jansen, throw him out there. We'll get him too. Anybody, they'll get. And and now they have a 1-0 lead. So at some point, butt's going to get tight, palms going to get sweaty, and you start pressing, and I think that could work against the Dodgers in this game if something don't happen. So we'll see, man, but I think they'll get it to a Game 7.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'll get it to a Game 7. I picked the Dodgers to win in 7 games, so obviously I'm hoping that happens. You know, but like Q mentioned, the game the other night, Game 5 was a classic. I will say this, and I've said this about, you know, other sports as well, but, you know, Major League Baseball, man, for that game to be on a Sunday, and I understand wanting to play in prime time, but with that game being on a Sunday, dog, you could have played the game at, I don't know, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, because that game started, I want to say, at 8 o'clock. And although you were up against Sunday Night Football, and they actually did draw better ratings than Sunday Night Football, even though the way the ratings are down in the NFL, I don't know if that's necessarily saying much. But, you know, a lot of people, man, checked out because, I mean, bro, the game didn't go off to like 12:30. you know, and it went to 10 innings. And it was, but it was a classic.
No. Like, it went off at one. I remember when that.
Oh,
when
was it? That, okay.
It was 1:39.
You know what? I checked out at about 12:30 because I couldn't hang, man. So I don't know, man. I don't know how, you know, you go about still, you know, doing that. But nonetheless, man, I think the Dodgers, that, like you said, particularly in this game, they're going to have to get, they're going to have to get Verlander up out of there and try to get them to get to their bullpen. The thing is that both teams have exhausted their bullpen. So this is one of the situations where they're actually going to need their starters to go as long as they can. You know, I don't know where this whole, and Ken, you mentioned analytics. I don't know when this whole idea of, you know, pitch a few innings and then get your starter out and then get to your middle relievers. I don't know when that became so prevalent in baseball, but, you know, I mean, we come from an era where, you know, yeah, you expect to, you know, if you had a guy who could throw, you know, you wanted him to be on the bump for at least, you know, 7 or 8 innings. If he, you know, as long as his stuff was good, you weren't worried about pitch count or anything like that. You know, it's like being in the finals and you're trying to manage LeBron's minutes. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, you don't have but so many games. You can't. Sometimes you can outthink yourself. And I think I said that on last week's podcast. Nonetheless, man, I think it'll go 7. I think the Dodgers will find a way. They're playing at home. Like you said, Ken, they're down 1-0 at this point in time at the top of the 5th inning at the time of this recording. But I think the Dodgers will find a way and we'll see how that plays out. Moving on to the NFL, prison break. Man, each week we come on here and we really don't know what we're going to talk about from week to week, but we know that there's always going to be headlines. We did not see this headline coming. As we mentioned last week, we knew that there was a meeting between owners and some of the NFL execs. And during that meeting, Houston Texans owner, Bob McNair, he made a comment. He said, quote, "We can't let the inmates run the prison." So to hear that come out of a billionaire's mouth about, you know, inmates running a prison, you know, at first, I guess the first thing I heard was I thought of the idiom, quote, you know, you don't let the inmates run the asylum, but he used the word prison. So, let's start right there, man. What were your thoughts on Bob McNair's comments?
I don't know, man. I think it's complicated. I don't want to bash the guy for saying something that he probably didn't mean for it to come across the way that it did. But I think with the climate that we're in, we know about blacks, prisons, the private prisons, the disproportionate number of black people in jail. Sometimes your subconscious can speak for you. Mm-hmm. And to hear him say that, that was kind of the first thing that came to my mind, whether or not that was his intent. And I think intent matters. But with everything that's going on, with him donating to the Trump campaign, all this stuff coming out to him, I mean, you have to look at him a little cross. And you have to wonder, like, what did he really mean by that comment other than I'm just going to use a phrase? Like, we need to get this thing under control. One of the things that bothers me about that is just the way that Jerry Jones and 16 other NFL owners are basically holding Goodell's job in their hand because he can't control the inmates. Mm-hmm. So if you really stop to think about that for a minute, like, it's almost like a riot in all honesty, because that's what they're essentially doing. They're standing up against their oppressors for something other than what this thing originally started out. Number one, that's bad enough. And number two, it doesn't feel like that partnership that the NBA has. And when you have somebody say something like this, and we know it's old white money, and majority of black players on the field, it kind of feels that way. So it shows that they don't respect you. Run, nigga, run. And that's kind of the feeling that we got. So, you know, Jerry Jones is like, you can't get these Negroes under control. And mm-hmm. we need somebody in here that can get these Negroes under control. After he sat and kneeled with them right. in protest, but not in protest of you know, inequality. It was in protest of Trump. And then Trump got on the phone with him, and then all of a sudden he changed his position. And now he's trying to get, you know, Goodell out of the league office, man. So I think it's a problem, and I hope this thing gets resolved real quick. But I'm proud of the NFL players for taking a stand and doing what they feel is right, and hopefully something you know, good can come out of this.
Q, what about you, man? Your thoughts on the comments from Bob McNair saying that the can't let the inmates run the prison.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think it was pretty racist, man. But I need to put a caveat on this. I think there's two different types of things that we can dissect from this one comment. And, you know, Jerry Jones came out in his defense and said, oh, Bob's comments weren't about his players, as if that makes it any better.
But, right. But, rest know, of the league is prison.
Yeah. And, but, you know, I think that really takes into account, man, just like where we, I'm trying to figure out the way to say this. It brings to light an issue within the sports industry that many people do not want to discuss. And that is the fact that as a athlete, your labor, your hard work is exploited, and you are treated as if it is a privilege for you to make majority old white men money. When the fact of the matter is that your labor is not even compensated for what it's truly worth. You're only worth what the market is telling you and what these owners have come together to bargain for and say, oh, this is what a great quarterback's worth. This is what a great, you know, point guard is worth. This is what a great pitcher is worth. Even though that the cap is non-existent in baseball, you kind of see where I'm going, but I'll stick more with the majority black sports. So basketball and in this case, football. So Bob McNair's remarks, he's talking about inmates in the prison. Call it Freudian, call it whatever you want to, you know, subconscious, call it whatever you want. That's what that man's true heart is. The whole donating to Trump, the whole kneeling with your players, all that stuff can, specifically about the whole kneeling thing, that was a performative act. That was something to just look good for the cameras. That was something to get good PR for your team. But it's those things that you do behind closed doors that reveal who you are as a person. And it's those things that when you have a microphone in front of you and it's what you say unfiltered that reflects on you as a person. Mm-hmm. So it is racist to say that the inmates are running the prison, not just because, you know, he feels as he can disagree with Colin Kaepernick. You can disagree all you want. But the moment that you feel as though that you put a connotation on players as prisoners, I think you're showing your ass, man. Because what does that mean? Can we just break that down for 2 quick seconds? I'm not gonna be long.
No, go ahead.
When you call someone a prisoner, you're calling them someone who is completely dehumanized, somebody who's been robbed of all human agency, someone who is supposed to live, breathe, eat, shit, and sleep by the rules of the prison, of the walls that you are confined to. So in over 60% black league, you're calling, you know, majority of black league prisoners for simply speaking out against police officers shooting unarmed black folks and unarmed people of color also. And you're calling them prisoners for silently protesting against that. That analogy brings to light something that we just don't talk about, man. And that's the fact that these players are treated as if it's, you know, a privilege for them to come in this league, get CTE, and make billions of dollars for this majority white male ownership. When the fact of the matter is that these men have worked their asses off from the time that they were boys. They've worked hard. They've sacrificed. Their families have sacrificed just for them to get to a finite amount of, you know, just to get to a league in which a finite amount of other men have also worked just as hard. And it's something that is a theme of ownership for some reason that goes on throughout sports. And there's a book that I recommend everyone read. It's called $40 Million Slaves.
True indeed.
Where it's talking about how there's a lot of plantation politics that transferred over into the sports industry and the way that they run. Just think about it, man. You got, you know, majority black men on a field, you got ownership. Just like think about the optics of that. Think about the wording behind that of how, oh, this man is an owner of the team. The same way that back in the days when you owned a plantation, you thought that you owned all the property that worked for the plantation. Well, there are some men out there like Mr. Bob McNair who make comments like the prisoner's comment that has the same type of energy behind it as a man who thinks that the people who work for your team, that you can control their every action, even when it's within the complete rules of the NFL and within the law of the United States. So I do think this comment was racist, whether you want to say it was subconscious, conscious, or whatever. I do think Bob McNair's heart was shown, and I'm very proud of DeAndre Hopkins for walking out of practice. I'm very proud of the guys who took a stand, and I really hope that this dialogue can move forward to where action is starting to be put onto the ground, where people really stop putting up with the BS coming from their ownership and actually demanding what they want. Like you said, Kyle, we don't see this a lot in the NBA because they bargain for what they deserve, for what they feel that they deserve as players. And even then, they're still not getting half of, you know, what the ownership is. So you got guys like KD who are given money to keep a team together when you can go into the luxury tax to pay him. You got guys like Odell Beckham who want to be the highest paid player in the league, but the ownership and the collective bargaining agreement said that wide receivers are only supposed to make a certain amount. I think it's time that when the next CBA comes up, I think these issues are going to be a lot more pressing. I think we're going to see a possible lockout. Because I think players are tired of being looked at as, you know, fitting into this box of, oh, you're a wide receiver, so you're only supposed to make this much. You're a running back, so you're supposed to make this much. Nah, if you're Odell Beckham, that owner should be signing you a blank check. If you're DeAndre Hopkins and you've had trash quarterbacks up until this very year, you should be getting a blank check. So I do think that Bob McNair's comments is going to be the first domino in a complete avalanche of dominoes to fall, where the end result will be a lockout where players will want their salaries upped a lot more, especially after seeing what the NBA salaries went up to. The NFL players are getting robbed, and they're tired of being treated like prisoners in these terrible contracts, these terrible rookie contracts. They want their money. And they deserve it. So I'm 100% in support with all the guys who knelt in protest to their owner. And I hope they keep sticking it to him, man, because you got to change your mindset in 2017, especially in this climate.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you and Ken made some great points. I think when I heard Bob McNair's comment, the first thing that came to mind was much like a lot of stuff that I hear or read or see on a day-to-day basis, particularly from this political climate in this administration that we're stuck in right now. Nothing surprises me. So I wasn't surprised. I don't know Bob McNair from, you know, Joe Blow down the street. I will say this much. When I heard it, I thought, okay, well, maybe that was a Freudian slip, because I said, I've always heard idiom, you know, you can't let inmates run the asylum. But then when I took it to, you know, what he actually said, his comment kind of struck me as, well, you know, he really is ignorant. I mean, let's just call it what it is. And I'm not above calling, even though I don't know Bob McNair, I feel very just in calling him ignorant. That was, and what made it worse was, you know, his explanation of it, you know, was like, well, I didn't mean to say that, but what I was trying to say was, no, that's not what you were trying to say, dog. You said what you meant, and you meant what you said, you know. So I, much like Richard Sherman, I am cool with people who let me know who they are and where they stand. I respect you more if you let me know that you feel that way about me, as opposed to you being around me, having me around, and, you know, you disguising your disgust or your hate for me or what have you. But this just, you know, echoes his comments, actually reflect the disconnect between these owners and these players, you know, because they don't know why the players are taking a knee. They don't understand why the players are doing what they do. And I understand, no, I'm not expecting management to be, you know, buddy, buddy, and owners to be friendly with the players. That's not the nature of their business. At the same time, Bob McNair, when you make that kind of comment, then I think about the franchise quarterback from the Houston Texans, right? Deshaun Watson. And as many of you know, Houston suffered a, you know, hurricane. People were displaced. Deshaun Watson gave his first game check to employees. And they showed a video of it, you know, like some cafeteria workers. He gave his first game check to them. You know, many of these people who were displaced, you know, so he took his first game check. I don't know how much it was, but he gave that to some ladies who worked in the cafeteria. Brown women who looked just, well, they didn't look just like him. They looked to be, you know, Hispanic, but nonetheless, brown people, a black man, you know. So my question is to Bob McNair, is this what you think of Deshaun Watson? Do you think of him as a prisoner? Is he a prisoner that shouldn't run the prison? Do you think of J.J. Watt, even though J.J. Watt is white, you know, do you think of him? J.J. Watt took to Twitter to raise 200. His goal was to raise 200,000 for the people who were displaced in his city. He ended up raising $37 million. Do you think J.J. Watt is a prisoner? And so I think it makes it worse when the majority of your team is black, but, you know, it makes it worse because you said the players. And I understand that there's a disconnect between the ownership and the players, but there shouldn't be this big a disconnect, and it should offend white players. And it looks like it did. And it definitely should offend the black players, because you don't want to associate the word prison and players, particularly when your players, the majority of your players are black. So I wasn't surprised at all. I would have been cool if Bob McNair said, you know what, man, I messed up. I'm sorry. I misspoke. You know, if he was honest about what it was he said, if he said, well, look, you know, this just shows me that I need to get to know my players better. You know, all it is, those are just the checks that he cuts. He doesn't know the second string cornerback on his team. He doesn't. He may know him by name. He may know him by face, but Q and Ken, I think the thing that has always kind of struck me is the relationship between ownership and the players. And I remember just a few weeks ago, as we saw Golden, and I'm going to flip it to basketball real quick. I remember watching Golden State win their rings. And what I paid attention to particularly was, as the owner of the Golden State Warriors was handing out the rings, I wanted to see the kind of interaction he had with the players, you know, particularly his stars, you know. Was he going to hug Draymond? Was he going to dap up Steph Curry? Was he going to, you know, give a long embrace to Steve Kerr and KD? And he did, you know, so that kind of tells me, I could kind of tell by the interactions, is that, you know, he has a different kind of relationship. And I understand basketball is a little bit different, but I think the thing is that in basketball, to some degree, the owners feel like the players are partners. That's not the case in the NFL. The NFL, and I'll take it back to 1987, Tex Schramm. I think Tex Schramm was the GM of the Cowboys at the time. The NFL was going through a lockout, a strike, if you will. And he told the players, hey, I'm paraphrasing the quote here. He said that we are the herders and you're the cattle, and we can always get more cattle. So that mentality still reigns to this day. And I think part of the reason why you see some of these owners not really understanding is because of these kind of comments, because there's a huge disconnect. In a conventional world, in a great world, these kind of comments would kind of make these owners kind of feel like, okay, maybe we should get to know our players a little bit better. Maybe we need to come to the table. But all they see is dollar signs, and all they see is checks. And they're about cashing the checks, and they're about the bottom line of their business. And I understand it, and I get it. And I'm not saying that you have to be buddy and friends with your employees, because they are the employers and they're the employees. But at the end of the day, stuff like this doesn't fly. And I agree with you, Q. It's going to be, when it comes time, I am really going to see, far beyond players taking a knee, I'm really going to see what this NFLP is made of, because they have a laundry list of stuff that they can bring to the table as far as they want in this next CBA. And it's time that you ask for it and demand it. And, you know, are you willing to sit out for it? And how long are you willing to sit out for it? Because without no players, there's no game. You know, so we'll see how that goes. So the next question I have for you guys, and Q, I'll start first with you. What did you think of the Texans, the players' response to, you know, with I think it was all but 10 players took a knee?
Yeah, it was a fantastic response. Because I still have those feelings that the knee kind of has lost meaning. But I do like this one in particular, simply just because standing up against oppressive forces and standing up against bigoted forces, I think it's necessary. I think it's necessary to send a message that you don't deserve our respect for what you just said. And while we can have a larger conversation at another time about NFL players and kneeling and what it really, really means to each and every one of them, I think it's just nice to have a symbol of solidarity between the players. And the solidarity movement that they put on, the show of solidarity that they put on Sunday, I think it was a fantastic move to make. I don't think there's anything else that they could have done but short of not play. But I think that in this case, not playing would have been almost kind of like self-defeating, you know, where it would have been like, well, we're just going to take our ball home and go. When instead, I feel like the knee in this situation was kind of warranted, because it's more of like a show of, well, you were the one to come out and try to kneel with us when Trump said something about the league. Now we're dealing against you. So it's kind of like putting both Trump and McNair in that same box of y'all both, we don't F with either of y'all. And I kind of like that, just based off the fact that DeAndre Hopkins, he left practice.
I love that.
So he knows that, look, if you all who continue to disrespect us, continue to use bigoted, you know, analogies and continue to demean us players like we're only dumb athletes who don't have minds and don't have, you know, intelligent things to bring to this world and in the discourse surrounding our political climate, then we're going to show out and we're going to be against you. And it's going to be funny when when a lot of is up for how many guys stay? How many guys try to, you know, get all the money that they can? And how many guys just flat out say, you know what, F this team, I'm out. And it's not because of my teammates, it's because it's owner. And you have to start punishing guys like this, man. As a player, yes, your power in terms of getting a contract from the owner might be very, very limited. But your power to say, F this, I'm uprooting either just myself or I'm uprooting my family, and we're going to go to you know, Blank City here because I don't mess with the ownership. That sends a message. And guys talk, players talk.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs to know that this type of, you know, analogy and this type of verbiage is unacceptable in 2017. And this is something that Trump would say. This is something that, like, you would hear from, you know, an alt-right member, man. Like, this is unacceptable. So to treat him like that by taking the knee, by walking out of practice, this is just a start. Well, so what happens when DeAndre Hopkins is up for a contract? Is he going to stay? What happens in 2020 when it's time? I'm talking, what happens in 2019 when Trump is ready to either put his bid in again for a second term? And does Bob McNair donate again? And are the owners cognizant of that? Do they care about that? Mm-hmm. And when free agents come in for meetings, and when it's time for big names to take meetings with the Texans, what are the guys saying to that guy? Don't come here. This guy's a bigot. Don't come here. As soon as my contract's up, I'm out. I wish they would trade me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come here. That's what guys will say. Players talk, and so does the money. But especially guys talk to each other, because now that we know that your heart is in that place, how many guys are going to want to say, I want to go play for that owner and right. that ownership? Not many people will. People love Jerry Jones because he's always down on the field and he's always, you know, yucking it up with his guys, and he seems like a player's owner. A player's owner. But guys like Bob McNair, who just sit in the skybox and look down on you as quote unquote prisoners, that has consequences. Mm-hmm. And like I said in my last analysis of what I think about the comments, this is just the start for him and for a lot of owners, because next there's going to be some real questions coming out very, very soon about guys who all donated to Trump. I promise you that's going to be the next thing, because this is just the beginning of a tidal wave that's starting out as a little bit of a ripple in the ocean. But I'm telling you, once it hits its apex, man, we're going to be talking about a lot of different owners and a lot of guys, as soon as that new CBA comes up, are going to be demanding that either Goodell has less power, the owners pay up more. It's going to be fun. It's going to be so fun to see. And I can't wait for these guys to get what they deserve, man, because they don't deserve to put up with this stuff from these owners who continuously think that they're just, you know, dumb athletes. They have more to say. They have more to say. They have more to offer than just playing on a field. And while they're on the field, they deserve to be compensated and be respected as men, not freaking prisoners. So shout out to the Texans. Shout out to DeAndre Hopkins for showing us a show of solidarity on Sunday. That's a very hard thing to do. And to the 10 people who didn't stand, just know that people are probably going to look at you a little weird, and some of your teammates, they probably not going to want to hang out with you after the season's over. So just know that you made your bed there, and that's fine. You know, at least show us who you are.
Well, you know what? The thing that I found impressive too, even the ones that stood, like they put a hand on a teammate that was kneeling. So it still, to me, showed a symbol of solidarity. I didn't have a problem with the guys that were standing. One thing I will say is to the fans who were like, well, you know, they should just, I wouldn't play for an owner like that. And I get it. I understand. And I tweeted this out. I understand why people would say that. And no, nobody would want, but you have to kind of, in a practical sense, you have to put yourself in their shoes. And that's hard to do, because think about it like this. Q, you work for someone. Ken works for someone. B and FIFO, myself, we all work for a company or whomever. Many of you who are listening work for someone. Put yourself in your shoes. Tomorrow you go to work, right? And you find out that the CEO of your company feels the same way that Bob McNair feels. Here's the thing. Q, you can go get another job. I can go get another job. Now, me and you probably, and Ken probably, won't quit our jobs tomorrow, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't quit a job without having one lined up. But let's say it takes us a month to find another. We'll find another job. DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt, whomever, they can't quit that job tomorrow, right? Even though they don't want to be there, they got to be there. Again, they're under contract. It's not that simple. So, you know, and think about it like this. At our companies that we work for, we don't know that the owner, how many times have you sat down and talked with the CEO? I've talked with the CEO of my company. I spoke to him once. I know what he looks like, but I mean, literally, I could pass him in the mall tomorrow and he wouldn't know me from a can of paint, you know, and I can assume that he may have donated to Trump's campaign. I can assume that he feels the same way that Bob McNair feels, you know, but again, I think we do ourselves a disservice when we're comparing ourselves to these professional athletes saying, well, I would just quit the job because that's not practical. Because here's the thing. We're not revenue generators at our job. I'd say 99.9% of the people who are listening to this podcast are not revenue generators at your job. The professional athlete is a revenue generator. They're the reason why you're going to spend $400 on a ticket. You're going to spend another $200 at concessions, another $50 in parking just to see them work and perform. So you can't really compare your situation to theirs. So to the Houston Texans players, I agree with you 1,000%, Q. All they could have done was, you know, take a knee. Not playing wasn't going to solve anything. I'm interested to see what happens come free agency. And Q, you hit the nail on the head. When they're pending free agents, you know, how can you woo in pending free agents? You know, we saw this whole ownership disconnect play out just not that long ago in the NBA with LeBron and Dan Gilbert. And we were all very surprised to see LeBron go back to Cleveland. But LeBron is the anomaly. LeBron is still LeBron after this season. If he chooses to go somewhere else, he can. And he has earned that right. But again, you're talking about a multimillionaire in LeBron and a billionaire in Dan Gilbert. LeBron is extremely rich. Dan Gilbert, extremely wealthy. There's a difference. So I want people who are listening to understand it's not as simple as you make it sound. If you say, well, I would just quit my job. No, you're not quitting your job. Because guess what? The car note, the truck note, you know, all of that note is still due each month. And we work to earn a living, but we also work and we're paying bills. So it's not as simple as people make it sound. So I want the fans listening, particularly the ones listening to this podcast, understand that. You can't tell the Texans players to just quit their job. It's not that simple. They're in contract. And no, they may not. I feel for those guys because they came together and they played a hell of a game on Sunday and a game that they, you know, really could have won. And so, you know, now they have to, you know, kind of still deal with, you know, that organization and deal with, you know, the owner indirectly. But we'll see how it plays out, man. But I give them credit. I give them all the credit in the world because, you know, they had a lot going on their plate. And, you know, for them to show up and play as well as they did in Seattle, I think is a testament to the type of players that they have. Kim, what about you, man? Your thoughts on how the Texans players responded?
I don't know, man. It's conflicting. Like, I just slipped. And I just said something that was racist. I didn't really mean it. Right? How far do you want to go when somebody just accidentally says something? So I like what DeAndre Hopkins did. I think that was really an appropriate response. Like if all of the black players or a majority of the black players just got up and left that day because of what they heard, cool, that would have been great because that was before he had a chance to meet with them. That was you hearing the comment, you're reacting emotionally, you're leaving. That's a good form of protest. Like you're not agreeing with the comments that were said. Now he met with you and then you say, okay, well, we'll just take a knee before the game. Well, he's already met with you. He's already explained what happened. You've already talked to him. So what are you really accomplishing by kneeling outside of solidarity? Right. So I don't know, man. Like I get it. I think it's just, I understand, but I think at some point somebody's going to have to. No, I won't say that. is I don't want to put that on there, because I think you make a valid point, Kyle, where you're saying that we're not going to quit. But I think the other thing when I look at that is that one of the things that we look at when we look at players like the NFL players and stuff like that, or NBA players, is that they're in a position to do more than we can, because they're revenue generators, like you said. So right. A player like DeAndre Hopkins matters. A player like LeBron matters, because without them, that ship don't sail. Without the Bradys or the Russell Wilsons or the Aaron Rodgers, what are you going to do? So the NFL requires and need them in order to make a profit. The sport will continue to go on. They'll just replace them, but it won't be the same. We, on the other hand, we don't really have that position of semi-authority in our jobs, because we're employees at will. Some of us have contracts, but you kind of get what I'm saying. So that's why we look at them and be like, you guys can do what we can't do. And that's why we need you guys to kind of speak out. And we're seeing it's having some level of impact in terms of conversation. But on one hand, while I don't think not playing would have accomplished anything, I think it would have also sent a real strong message to the NFL and the NFL owners that we are serious. We're tired of you guys looking down on us the way you are. We're tired of you guys looking at us as prisoners. You know, this is just something you said in a meeting. I don't know what you're saying in private. And we need some level of respect, because right now we're cattle. We're cattle. Mm. And you're sending us out for slaughter. CTE, we get concussions. Zach Miller almost lost right. his whole leg. His leg turned around. He almost that was lost crazy. His leg. Players are damn near losing, you know, feeling in their lower limbs. Like, it's serious. It's a battlefield. And you call us prisoners? Mm-hmm. So, while, yeah, that's why I'm kind of conflicting on their response. I think, and I think that at the end of the day, they handled it the way they needed to handle it. And they do have a job to do. And I think they made a stand. They met with him. They let everybody know where they feel. And they knelt, and here we are. We're back at it another week. So
yeah, and I think ultimately they're playing for each other in the room. Everybody's, you know, the guys on the team are playing for each other. They're not, you know, they play for the Texans, but they're not playing for McNair. And I thought it was pretty cool for the head coach Bill O'Brien to get behind his players, and he said he was standing with them firmly. So, you know, I think that, you know, it was kind of like us against ownership type mentality. And I think that's, you know, if that's what it's going to be to get them to play better and to play like how they played, I think that's good. And again, those comments are going to go a long way, and not just the comments, but what happens, what Bob McNair does or doesn't do, what he says or doesn't say going forward, as to whether or not they will be able to bring in other players as well. Now, speaking of the meeting that they had, there's been rumors circulating that Colin Kaepernick would be invited to the Players Coalition meeting with the owners. In fact, there was supposed to be a meeting yesterday, and matter of fact, but the meeting was canceled. And I think some of the fallout after the comments that were made by McNair. So now here's the thing. We've got rumors going around. The owners have said from the beginning that Colin Kaepernick is more than welcome to attend the meeting. As we all know, Colin Kaepernick has filed a grievance against the NFL owners for collusion. Not a lawsuit, but a grievance, which has yet to be heard in court. The NFLPA, the only thing the owner said was, hey, look, Colin is he's more than capable of coming to the meetings. He just has to be invited by the players. according to the players, they invited Colin Kaepernick, but Colin Kaepernick's representatives say that they have yet to receive a formal invitation from the NFLPA. So there's a lot of bantering going back and forth, it seems, and Colin's camp has been very steadfast in saying that, look, Colin is more than willing to come, but he has not been invited by the players. And all the owners said, like, look, hey, we ain't in it. He's more than welcome to come. You just have to invite him. And according to them, there's been no invitation. So, Ken, if and when there is another meeting, should he go? Why or why not?
Yeah, he should go. I mean, it started with him. And he should have been at the first one. And, you know, this unrest that's going on in the NFL, they're all following, I won't say following, that's not 100% true, but, you know, he's the origin of it, the genesis. And it would be great for him to be there to speak to the issues, directly to the issues that they're protesting for. Not the national anthem, not any of their other stuff, but to the issues. And I think the players would like for him to be there so they can hear directly from him on this. You know, Baldwin and Bennett have done a Baldwin and – is it Bennett or is it Reed? I think it may be Reed. They've done a great job of carrying this on in his absence. And – I think that they'll continue to do a great job, but you still need him because, mm-hmm. you know, he was the one that set this whole thing off. And I just think it's important to hear from the guy that kicked this thing off, man, because Colin has been quiet for a long time. And on one hand, I think that's great because they don't know what you're thinking. You're not playing your car and you're leaving them guessing. And to some people that puts them, you know, at a state of uneasiness. Like they don't know what's going on. What are you thinking? What are you plotting? And while that's great, I also think that they'll need not necessarily his leadership, but at least some form of guidance. And I think it's important for the NFL owners to hear from him. Because he has been shut out, and I think it'll be dope if he actually got a chance to get up and go. So I hope he does. I think it would be a good sign for the NFL to definitely do that, especially with this grievance that's coming. And more than likely, I think he'll end up being there.
What about you, Q? If and when there is another meeting, do you think that Colin Kaepernick should be there, and why? Why or why not?
Yeah, I do. I do think that he should be there, just simply just because. He's basically, just like Kenan said, you know, he did a great job of explaining it. He's the genesis of the entire, I guess you could say social awakening going out throughout the NFL and just the amount of activism going on now. He's inspired a lot of it, and the whole knee thing started with him. So if you're going to have players taking knees, then you need to have the guy who started the whole knee thing. Don't really have much other to say than that, but I guess I could supplement that a little bit more with the fact that I believe Colin should be at these meetings simply just because I believe he can offer a perspective, and perhaps some of these owners might see where his heart is and they can make a decision off of, okay, I see what he's talking about. Let's like sign him either next year or whatever. Let's invite him to camp next offseason. Because I know Colin is not in the business, according to Shannon Sharp, Colin is not in the business of begging for a job because he knows that he's done nothing to beg for, which he's 100% accurate with. But I do think that it could help him a little bit to reissue a statement about how he feels about the racial climate in the NFL, going to all those meetings, meeting with the NFLPA, talking to owners in the meetings. That stuff can help. He doesn't have to beg. He can literally just explain his position, explain where his politics are at, re-clarify what he means and what the knee means to him. And you can just speak truth to power instead of having to, you know, get on your knees for your job. You can still be a man. I think that's Colin's biggest reservation is he doesn't want to come across as if he's going to grovel for a position on a football team when there's so many bad quarterbacks. He's, you know, he's not even getting to that. But, yeah, man, he should definitely go to the meetings if he's invited. I'm inclined to believe Colin over the owner. So if Colin says that he hasn't been invited, then he hasn't. This is going to be very interesting to see because if he goes to these meetings, the reception that he gets from the players and the response that he gets from the owners is really going to be make or break from make or break for his entire NFL career. Because if he goes up in these meetings and says something and the owner's like, we don't want this distraction, in their minds it's a distraction, not to me, then I think he's done. But if he goes in there and then he just gets that one ear from one of these owners and they're just like, okay, then I think that we might be able to see Colin Kaepernick on an NFL field again. But that's remained to be seen, man.
I'm gonna be the contrarian on this one, man. I don't think he should go. And the reason why I don't think he should go, now Q, you and Ken made some great points. I think the owners have made it up in their minds that they're not going to sign this guy. There's nothing. I mean, he could, and I've heard, you know, some of the quote unquote experts say that, you know, well, we just want to hear from Colin. We want to hear where his head is. I mean, bruh, you didn't have, nobody had to hear from Jay Cutler to see where his head was. Miami made a phone call to his agent. Yo, you want to bring him to camp? Yeah, we will come to camp. How much you want? We want 10 million. Okay, bet. Let's make it happen. Be there, be at camp at, you know, tomorrow at 5. It was just like that. It wasn't no, we need to have a press conference. Here's what I'm fearful of, Q and Ken. I think if they bring Colin to the meeting, it's just going to be a photo op. You know, the same way your man's up in the White House was having people come to his building.
Like Steve Harvey.
Yeah, like Steve Harvey and Jim Brown and Ray Lewis. All, I mean, that's all that was. And that's what I'm thinking this is going to be. You know what it's going to be? Well, you know, what they will end up saying at the end of the day is, hey, well, we did invite him to the meeting. So what? You don't need to have a meeting with Colin Kaepernick to see where he stands. His position hasn't changed. You know, you know, you keep hearing, well, he might be a distraction. He's not a distraction. You have players on your team that are kneeling now. I still don't understand how it is. We're in what, week 8, week 9, something like that. He doesn't have a job. And he kneeled last year. And we have players that kneel every Sunday and they still have their jobs. So you can't tell me that he's not being blackballed. It's clear as day. And for them to give him a job at this point would be an admission that they blackballed him. They are determined to send a message, and that's what they're doing. I would tell Colin Kaepernick, if he was listening to this podcast, and I'm sure he is, that he should go if I felt like it was going to help him. I don't think it's going to help him. It's going to help the NFL. Because from a PR perspective, they'll say, well, hey, we invited him. We had talks. I mean, what can he say to get himself a job? Nothing. Not when you are the Baltimore Ravens and you hiring guys that played in the World League. Come on, man. It's a dog and pony show. And that's what, and the sad part about it is that's what people want to see. The NFL wants to win the PR game. If for you fans listening, if you haven't figured that out by now, that's all the NFL wants to do. They want to win the PR game. They ever since they've been taking these L's since like the Ray Rice case and everything like that, they want to look good PR wise. And it looks great if Colin Kaepernick shows up and he's, you know, he got the afro going and he shows up in a dashiki and, you know, he's at this meeting and he's talking and he takes a couple of pictures with Jerry Jones and everything. Everybody sings Kumbaya and they play the Migos in the background. And, you know, come on, man, it's a waste of time. If I felt, if I, and again, if I'm Colin's agent, I'm not, I'm not taking a meeting with y'all unless you can tell me, unless you're going to tell me why I don't have a job. No, I'm not going. You know, I mean, my agent could go, I guess, but what is it? What is it to comp? What is it going to accomplish? You know, are you going to do everything that you said that you were going to do? You know, I understand that they're going, some of the owners are talking about, you know, kind of meeting the players halfway and hearing some of their grievances as far as, you know, what they want as far as social injustice and all that stuff like that. These players also want to see Colin Kaepernick back in the league. You've had guys from Tom Brady to Aaron Rodgers to Cam Newton say that he should be in the league. What more do you want? So,
well,
the
meeting.
Go ahead, Cam. I'm sorry.
The meeting isn't for him to get a job, though, is it? I think it was about the issues, the reason why they're protesting, right?
You know what, man? At this point, Ken, I think sometimes a lot of that stuff gets turned around and twisted to the point where we have players that are taking a knee that if you ask them, they can't eloquently state why they're taking a knee. You know, and they, I think to a man, a lot of them want to see Colin back in the league. But, you know, they're not going to sacrifice their employment to get Colin back in the league.
That's a good point, Kyle. That's a really good point, man. And that's what I was saying a couple of weeks ago when y'all had me on, that a lot of the knees just become meaningless to a lot of these guys. And I think a lot of it is cowardly, in my opinion. I know I'm the type of person who wouldn't ask something of someone I wouldn't be able to do myself. And I just think about all these, the comment that you just made makes so much sense, because it's like these guys are just taking knees now for anything under the sun. They're taking knees because their baby mama asked for more, you know, child support. You know, it's just like, dude, like what else do you like? Do you understand what the whole thing started from?
Right.
People are taking knees because of yada yada, but instead they're missing the entire point. And I think it makes the movement look less legitimate when you're taking knees because you're personally offended by the president calling out the entire league. Right. And where were you when Colin Kaepernick was putting his neck on the line for?
You know what it is, Q? Remember when it was Black Lives Matter? Then it was Blue Lives Matter. Then it was All Lives Matter. Then it was, Super Friends Lives Matter. I mean, you know, Rappers Lives Matter. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. Y'all killing me. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, man. But I totally understand and get what you and Ken are saying. I don't necessarily disagree. I'm just saying that for me, I don't want it to be a dog and pony show. And I've seen enough dog and pony shows to realize that, you know, again, the NFL, they want to win the PR game. They don't care about nothing else but winning the PR game. And, you know, they would trot Colin out. And maybe that's why you haven't heard from Colin. Because with him not saying anything, his words can't get misconstrued. You know, we heard reports a couple of weeks ago that, you know, that he was not going to take a knee if he was signed. Well, hell, he hadn't gotten signed. So I don't know where that came from. I think Jason Lockham-Ford from the NFL Network was just making up stuff. So I don't know, man. And unfortunately, that's what happens when you're not talking. Sometimes people will create stuff just to say stuff. So we'll see, man. Moving on to the NBA, former Commissioner David Stern made headlines this past week when he was being interviewed. He said that he would like to see the NBA do away with their ban on players and the usage of marijuana. He said in states that is legal, he feels like it should be legal for players to, you know, engage in marijuana. So he's actually a proponent of lifting the ban of being tested for weed. Ken, your thoughts on that, man? Should they follow Stern's word and stop testing for the sticky or the icky?
I don't really have a strong opinion on this one way or the other, but I will say that I think that if they do stop testing for it and make it legal, then yeah, this would be a means of keeping the man down, man. You know, you dope them up and then they can't cause any trouble because they'll be too high to go out there and protest and lock arms when issues pop up, or wearing I Can't Breathe shirts because, you know, they'll be too high to fight for, you know, their fellow brothers in arms. So Nah, I don't think so, man. If they put a set of rules around it, I can see it not impacting the game, but I think my concern would be that it would impact the game. Now, look, I'm not naive. I don't play with a lot of people that have been high and played basketball, and for some, you know, it didn't seem to slow them down and impact their game that much at all. So yeah, you can have some functioning weed heads out there that can still play the game, but I think it's cool the way it is. I don't think it's that big of an issue for people to be out there really fighting for. So, you know, but again, I'm cool either way.
What about you, Q? Marijuana, reefer, weed, whatever you want to call it, the bomb, kush. Should it be legal in the NBA, man?
Yeah, man, this is so stupid. Like, excuse my language. This is so ignorant that people think that this drug should be outlawed in sports. Look, man, J.R. Smith, I didn't see that man take a whole bottle of Hennessy the night before a game and go out there and drop 30. The fact that people think that you just smoke weed and you just become this like zombie who can't function, it's utterly ridiculous, man. Look, obviously, if I was a GM, I would, in NFL and NBA, but specifically we're talking about the NBA, of course I would legalize it and I would let them smoke, you know, on their off days. I don't think you should do it on the days that, like, you're playing. I think that's irresponsible. But the days that you're off, man, the high, depending on what kind of strain you smoking, there's really not a high out there that lasts more than 2-3 hours. You know, and that depends on if you just, you know, partake within one session of smoking. The same way that if you drink a lot of alcohol in one session, that's going to last way longer than you smoking a blunt, smoking a joint. So, yeah, man, like being a high impact athlete, a guy who's constantly jumping, constantly lifting weights, constantly training, those days off, man, you should be able to smoke a joint, man. Like if you have 3 days off and you want to roll up in Denver and get you a nice little eighth or a nice little, you know, like a nice little nug, as the kids say, then I think you should be able to do that, man. I think regulated correctly. I think parameters put on it correctly. I think it can work. I don't believe that athletes would really abuse it. And I'm putting a lot of faith in athletes, but I really do think that they wouldn't abuse it if you put reasonable parameters on being able to smoke weed. Because if you're smoking weed on a game day, you're already irresponsible in probably other facets of your life. But if they tell you that, yo, during the off season, it's all good. During, you know, after a back-to-back, it's all good. I don't see a problem with that. You know, it's just we need to start treating, you know, marijuana as if it's alcohol. And I'm not even a weed smoker myself. I've only, you know, done the dirty a couple, like maybe like 4 times in my entire life. But every time that I have personally partaken in the activity, it's only been about 2 to 3 hours that I've been feeling the effects from the, from what I've smoked. The same way that if I drank, I feel that shit until the next morning, depending on how much. So we need to start treating these people like adults. And I do kind of feel strongly about this because there's so many people making money off of it, and there's so many states legalizing it, that athletes who train hard every single day, that's a better alternative, in my opinion, and the studies show that it's a better alternative to, you know, smoke a joint than it is to go and take, you know, some painkillers for your ACL that you're in recovery with, or if you've had a calf strain, it's probably better for you to smoke that than it is to, you know, take XYZ. That's just my 2 cents. I do think that they should allow it. And I think David Stern is pretty spot on that the starting out, it should be the teams that play within the states that have legalized it. I think it's a smart move.
Yeah, then everybody would be trying to get traded to Denver.
Oh, man. Everybody trying to bring Seattle back.
Yeah, I'm trying to go to Seattle. I'm trying to go to Denver. I'm trying to, you know, play with these guys. man, I found it interesting because obviously David Stern, you know, his name and his legacy carries a lot of weight in the NBA. He was the guy, you know, commissioner. It was under his watch that the league was, you know, resurrected, if you will. And, you know, the NBA's current commissioner, Adam Silver, is a, you know, a pupil of David Stern, if you will. So I know while Adam Silver makes his own decisions, if David Stern says something like this, you know, it does, you know, hold some weight. Honestly, I could care less. I said on this program before, I've never smoked weed before, but I know a whole lot of weed heads. Friends with a whole lot of weed heads, play ball with a whole lot of weed heads in college. I never tried it. So I, you know, it's no big deal to me. I will say this much. I know that players, the current NBA players, you know, they're tested, you know, randomly tested a couple of times a year. So, you know, they also know when they're going to get their last. They know that they're tested when they come to camp. They might be tested once again during the season. And then there's like, I think, one other random test. And then after that, you know, like, so you could get your last test, let's say, I don't know, January 15th. And so after that, there's no more testing. There's no testing during the playoffs or anything like that. So, you know, it's not like, I mean, the players who smoke, they know when the tests are coming. So, I mean, think about it. When's the last time you heard about a player, you know, getting suspended for, an NBA player for that matter, getting suspended for weed? You know, it doesn't happen. My thing is, you know, if they want to legalize it or make it like that where they're not testing for it, because for a long time they didn't test for it. You know, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's crazy if you think players aren't smoking weed right now. And I think what we'll see going forward, particularly if they can tie marijuana, the smoking of marijuana, and as to pain relief, because one thing we don't really realize is that, you know, a lot of these players, you know, not just football players, but basketball players as well, they deal with a lot of pain, you know, aching joints and stuff like that. And if, you know, smoking a joint can help, you know, relieve that pain, you know, maybe the NBA and other subsequent sports can, you know, be evading, you know, lawsuits down the road. So I'm all for it, man. If you want to get high, get high, you know. And I think most players are responsible enough, like you said, Q, not to know not to get high, you know, the night before. I mean, like 10 minutes before game 7 starts. Or the night before a big game or something like that. So I think we're crazy if we think players aren't smoking weed now. So, and that's in every sport. I'm not even going to sit here and tell you, cause I don't have it here in front of me, but I don't think hockey even tests for that. So if hockey doesn't test for it, I'm pretty sure they're smoking weed in hockey. I'm pretty sure they're getting high. So, you know, take that how you want to take it. All right, man, it's almost time for us to get out of here. But before we get out of here, man, we got a couple of one guy to goes. One guy to go is a little game they play online. These ideas come from me, but a good friend of mine, my man Eclectic on Twitter. You can follow him at Eclectic with a K, or you can follow him at One Guy to Go. So basically, we give you four choices. You pick the choice, and whatever choice you pick has to leave forever. Not hard, just real simple. So I got two sports joints and I got two hip hop joints. Let's go hip hop first. Can One Guy to Go, Rockefella, Bad Boy, Death Row, or No Limit? One Guy to Go.
Bad boy.
What? You're getting rid of Puff? Take that.
Outside of Biggie and maybe that first Black Rob album.
Oh, that Black Rob album is so cold.
I mean, what else is there?
How dare you disrespect the great G Dep? Shout out to G Dell. Q, what about you, man? Rockefella, Bad Boy, Death Row, No Limit. One Guy to Go.
Man. Bad Boy.
I'm so disappointed in y'all.
The reason why I gotta say Bad Boy, man, is just because, like, No Limit. I love Master P. I ain't gonna lie to you. No Limit Soldiers, all that. It's crazy. Death Row, you got so many Pac albums. Incredible. Rockefeller, you got Blueprint. Reasonable Doubt. You know, the Siegel albums. Cameron had an album on there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just got too many classics on Rockefeller. So that's going nowhere.
Don't forget about the Memphis Bleak albums.
Man, that Mad Bleak album was crazy. Don't even try to play Memphis Bleak. Don't try to play him, bro.
I love Bleak, man. Shout out to Bleak.
That was a good album. And Freeway album, too. I can't even.
First Freeway album was so cool.
Philly Freezer, you know what I'm saying? So Rockefeller going nowhere. So the thing, Bad Boy, okay. Harlem World, all right. Cool. Classic, but G-Dep, fire. But nah, man.
Okay. I'm gonna be the contrarian on this one. It's tough, man, but I gotta get rid of No Limit, man. Mm-hmm. And I love P. And P, the Tank ran, don't get it twisted, the late 90s, early 2000s, the Tank ran the South, and then subsequently was the emergence of Southern hip-hop. So most Southern acts would not exist had there not been the run and the acceptance of the Tank, because you know, Master P had people in New York City bumping their music, bumping his whole label's music. But yeah, outside of P, I really, P and True, I listened to. I had those albums, but outside of that, I can't. I mean, like Kane and Abel and all them other people on the label, I just didn't buy their album. Mystical's album, I didn't get Mia X's album, and I get rid of No Limit, but that's tough though. All four great labels. All right, let's go to the NFL. Q, quarterbacks. One got to go. David Carr, Kirk Cousins, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. One got to go.
Sorry. I'm gonna say Carr.
Okay, you get rid of Carr. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Carr, man. Yeah, Carr gotta go. I think Jameis has the potential. I don't think Kirk Cousins is terrible. And I like Marcus Mariota's potential once they put some real actual wide receivers around him. I
always love Mariota.
I love Mariota, man. I think that once you put some real talent around him, he'll be able to do something. But right now, your best wide receiver is Eric Decker. So it's like,
Okay. Ken, what about you? David Carr, Kirk Cousins, Jameis Winston, or Marcus Mariota?
Oh, this is easy. Kirk Cousins all day.
Wow. Every
day. Yeah.
Same here. Yeah. And that was it. That's why I was like, I was trying to figure out why you were pausing, because I'm like, is he really thinking about this one? Because for me, yeah, Kirk Cousins. You know what, man? Kirk Cousins is okay. I'm not as high on Kirk Cousins as everybody else is, man. I'm just not, man. And I'm interested to see what happens, you know, this year for him, and then, you know, subsequently, you know, free agency next year. One thing I will say about Kirk Cousins, he might be a bum on the field, but he's a legend at the bank. That's for sure. Q, you'll appreciate this one. You're a big man. You're 6'7", 6'8". Okay. Let's go NBA. Power forwards. Karl Malone. Tim Duncan. Charles Barkley, Kevin McHale. One got to go.
If I'm going just off skill alone.
You can get them off however you want to do it based off of. But somebody got to go.
Tim Duncan's going nowhere. Okay. He's the GOAT. Footwork is incredible. Bank shot is iconic. Kevin McHale's going nowhere. Hook shot, iconic. Defense was good. Footwork was great. It's between Barkley and Karl Malone, man. Karl Malone never did it for me in terms of, like, just, like, that will to win and, like, just, like, that leadership aspect. He never did it for me, but he was consistent as hell. But then you just have Barkley, who was just a beast, man. Like, Barkley could do it all. Like, he was really, like, He's fast as on the web for his size. I'm going to say Karl Malone, man.
Okay.
I'm going to just say Karl Malone has to go just because I think in terms of go-to moves, in terms of just the talent, I think Timmy's the most fundamentally sound. I think Barkley's the most talented of this entire list. I think Mikhail is the winner's winner of this list, although Tim has five, you know. But when I think of, like, you know, that, like, dig deep type of guy, like, Kevin Mikhail played with a damn near 1 foot and went to a finals. So, like, dude, you know, it's respect. And just see Karl Malone, a consistent guy, but just never really did it for me as a player. But he's a Hall of Famer, obviously, one of the best ever. And it's a hard decision, but I had to go Karl Malone.
Okay. What about you, Ken?
Karl Malone. Yeah, it's not hard for me at all. Karl Malone, simply off the fact that he let Jordan strip him in the post. And
he didn't see him, Ken.
Hey, man, it's Karl Malone. That man is strong as hell. You shouldn't let that happen. So, yeah, just off that alone, let's go ahead and get him up out of there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make it a trifecta, man. I'm getting rid of Karl Malone, too, just on the strength that I never liked Karl Malone. I agree with Q, talent-wise. I mean, Barkley's probably the better all around of the four, but Kevin McHale's post moves were legendary.
Torture chamber.
I mean, and the thing was, like, for those, especially those who didn't see McHale in his prime, it wasn't like McHale was a great jumper. He wasn't a great leaper at all.
That pivot foot, man.
Yeah, that pivot foot was deadly. Malone, obviously, all-time scorer. Like you said, Q, Tim Duncan. I don't think I've ever seen Tim Duncan miss that bank shot, ever. And I still make the case that Tim Duncan is the greatest player in his generation.
Over Kobe Bryant?
I can make a case that he's better than Kobe. But we'll do that for another podcast. I can make a case he's better than Kobe.
You'd be right. But go ahead.
I can make a case. All right, last one. MCs. Let's take it to hip-hop. MCs. Q, however you want to slice it, whatever, one of these MCs has to go.
Okay.
Let's take it out west. Ice Cube. Snoop Doggy Dogg. Tupac Amaru Shakur. Kendrick Lamar Duckworth. One got to go.
I'll go. How about that? I gotta just do it the way I did the last one. All right. First off, Tupac Shakur is going nowhere. It's a 7-day theory. Fantastic. All Eyes on Me. Fantastic. Me Against the World, probably lyrically his best album. Classics like Brent Benton's Got a Baby, all that stuff. Iconic. I think Kendrick has earned the right to be in that Mount Rushmore for West guys, just off of the strength of his albums. I think he's only going to continue to get better. So it comes down to one guy for me, because Ice Cube is going no damn where. Like, Ice Cube's first 4 or 5 albums, fantastic. Mm-hmm. You got songs like Black Korea, like, which is incredible. You got, I mean, like, oh my goodness. What's the name of that song on The Predator where he starts a song of Not Guilty, Not Guilty? That joint, joint. That's my joint. The Predator is a great album. Snoop Dogg's first album is incredible, man. It's probably a top 5 of a debut album ever, with College Dropout, Illmatic, right? But after that album, for me, I don't have an album from Snoop where I'm like, yo, this right here, like, yeah, I have like a couple where I'm like, okay, this is a good song here and there, but Doggy Style started out at such a hype, and then it only got worse from there for me. Like, yes, you had like Rhythm and Gangsta, you know, the Blue Carpet Treatment, those are good albums, but once you put on What's My Name and Gin and Juice and Lottie Dottie, you can't really go too much lower than that. And I feel like Snoop Dogg is, and I mean this in the best way possible, he's like raps like greatest underachiever, man. Because it's like once you start out at that height and you keep going down, it's amazing to me how he was able to stay relevant just off of his hits and not being able to deliver continuously classic albums. And I feel like all four of those other guys will, by the end of their career, have two or three. I think Ice Cube has four in a row, but that's just my personal opinion. I think all the other guys, Kendrick, Pac, Ice Cube, I think those guys have two or three classics. So Snoop got to go just off the fact that I think he only has one classic album.
Okay. Didn't expect that answer, but okay. Ken, what about you, man? Let me read them again. Ice Cube, Snoop D-O-double-G, Tupac, and Kendrick Lamar. One got to go.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Snoop Dogg, too. Simply off the strength of that first No Limit album.
Stop.
That first No Limit album was terrible. Was that the Dog Father?
I think so.
That was the second Death Row. It was It Pays the Cost to Be the Boss, right?
Oh, okay. No, I thought it was the Dog Father. I can't, man.
Dog Father was a collection of old Snoop songs. I think they had that they put out. I bought that album. I was pissed.
Yeah, it fell a little short of expectations for me and Calvin Brodus. Again, I'm gonna be the contrarian, man. First of all, Ice Cube. Ice Cube is lyrically in like my top 15 MCs of all time. So Ice Cube is going nowhere. Snoop, and just for those of you scoring at home, I did my one got to go based on lyricism. So Snoop, even though the Dog Father was a misstep, that paid a cost to be the Cube, to be honest, I don't even think I ever, I'm pretty sure I didn't buy that album. I might have listened to it like two or three times before I trashed the dub that I had. But yeah, Snoop is a legend. I mean, Snoop, I am really surprised at how Snoop still is like this legendary status icon. I mean, he's got a TV show with Martha Stewart, for God's sake. But yeah, Snoop is going nowhere. Kendrick Lamar, man. I've said this before on my podcast. Being a 10-year fan of hip hop, listening to hip hop since the 80s, I think he is one of the few MCs that could have rapped in the 80s and the 90s, as well as where he's currently rapping right now, and would have held his own. I have been more than impressed with just about everything he's put out. He has yet to disappoint me. And I think if he continues on this path, I think he will be on the Mount Rushmore. I think he will be in, I don't think he's worthy of anyone's top five right now, but I think he is well on his way. This guy is, he's a star, man. He's a star. Lyrically, you go back and listen to Overly Dedicated, you go back and listen to Section 80, and you still pick up on stuff. I went back last week, just as a little side note, I went back last week and listened to Good Kid. I hadn't listened to Good Kid, Mad City in about a year and a half. And I found myself hearing things that I hadn't heard in the previous times that I listened to it. And that's what great music does. To Pimp a Butterfly is my favorite album. Damn, incredible album. So Kendrick's not going anywhere. Tupac, I love Tupac. I think Tupac is the most iconic rapper ever. But Pac wasn't lyrical. So he got to get out of the paint. So I'm getting rid of the Pac. So that's the only reason why I'm getting rid of Pac is because I don't think he was lyrical. I think he is a great rapper, but he wasn't lyrical. Q, you mentioned some of his albums. Me Against the World is my favorite Tupac album. That I was just talking about on Twitter today. The All Eyes on Me, I think if it was one CD, it might have been one of the greatest albums ever. That back half of the second album, too many filler songs.
See, I'm young, so I love that stuff.
Well, you know what, man? And I know you love the Don Caluminati. And I went back and listened to that. Those, like, the first seven or eight songs, man, are so hard. then he had a couple of joints on the back, and I'm like, damn it, Pac. But I know he wasn't alive, so I don't know. Right. I give Pac a mulligan on that, because I think if he had been alive, there's a two or three songs that wouldn't have made that album, but I still love that album.
That Me and My Girlfriend, man. That song.
Which Jay-Z stole, by the way.
Shout out
to Jay. But nonetheless, man, yeah, Pac, I'm getting rid of Pac. So for those of you in the comment section, this is why I'm getting rid of Pac. For no other reason other than he wasn't lyrical. It is time to wrap up the show. We want to thank everybody for checking us out, tuning in as you do each and every week. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you download, subscribe, and share the content that we have on here. It's time for our final thoughts. Q, you're up first. You got any final thoughts?
Yeah, man. My final thoughts is when trusting the process, it's very easy to get lost in the sauce. And what I mean by that is that Sixers fans, we've been through this 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row. We've drafted somebody thinking that they're going to be ready to go, be this revelation for the city, be an incredible contributor to the team, and start this amazing journey of their career. And they end up getting hurt. Joel Embiid, we knew he was going to be hurt. Nerlens Noel, we knew we drafted him with the ACL tear, and we knew he was going to be out for the year. But in the drafting of Ben Simmons, Jahlil Okafor, and now Markel Fultz, they did not complete their rookie seasons, and they did not play more than 60 games for Jahlil Okafor's case. And I'm going to take this time to criticize the 76ers for their management of their players and their health situations. When it comes to Markel Fultz's shoulder and the reason why he's shooting like he's Herman Munster, it's pretty saddening to look at how the Sixers have grown organizationally but still fall into the same traps, still falling into the same old behaviors of non-transparency, being completely, you know, opaque in terms of how they let the fans and let the media know what's going on with their players. So Markel's shoulder is messed up, and he had to put fluid into it. He had a cortisone shot put into his shoulder to loosen it up, to get the fluid out of it and disperse the fluid and disperse the swelling, because there was reported said that he could not lift his shoulder up. In Ben Simmons' case, he had a freak accident that completely kept him out from his rookie season. Jahlil had a meniscus issue, and all three of these, you know, and even in B's case, he kept on having to get surgeries, and the information coming out about all these injuries was always very vague. It was always out indefinitely. We'll see where it is. We'll see where it goes. For Ben Simmons, the organization said it was going to be like a 9 to 12 week injury where he'd be back maybe by All-Star break. All-Star break came, nothing happened. For Jahlil Okafor's case, his rookie season, when he went out, they said it was a meniscus tear. He'll be back by the end of the season. He was not back by the end of the season. For Joel Embiid, when he was going through his back surgery and his foot surgeries, we were all like, what's going on with him? Not a lot of information coming out. So my target today of my criticism is the organization in terms of Colangelo and the team doctors. 76ers, man, we got to step it up. And the window of opportunity for us to win a championship has not even opened yet. But it's very possible that if we continue down this road of not taking care of our players, that it will never open. It's starting out great. It looks like it's getting there with the resurgence of Philadelphia sports and the resurgence of Sixers basketball, starting with the helm of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. But stuff like this should not happen to your rookie number one pick. If you know that your rookie is not 100% well, I don't care what he says, don't play him, because you have a history of playing guys who are hurt, or you have a history of drafting guys who are hurt and not playing them the entire season. So if Markel's shoulder was hurting before the preseason, why was he playing in preseason? It doesn't matter if the scans were negative. If he's saying his shoulder's sore, keep him out. That doesn't make sense to me to play him and risk what we're seeing right now out indefinitely. They said that about Ben Simmons. They said it about Jahlil Okafor. And we know that those guys did not play their entire season. So are we looking at another situation where a number one pick for Philadelphia does not play their entire rookie season? Is this what we do in Philadelphia now? We just draft guys to keep them out of their rookie seasons? And how do we stop this? We need better team doctors, and we need more organizational transparency. And if we don't get the transparency from our organization and we don't get better team doctors, then this window of opportunity that we so desperately want to come to Philadelphia will never open, because we will never be able to keep our guys up, right? You have to put talent on the floor for the window of opportunity to open. So for whoever's listening, if you're a fan, if you're just a fan of the game, keep an eye on what the 76ers do organizationally, because that's going to tell you everything you need to know within the next 2 years of if we're serious about this rebuild or if this is just more PR stunts so Colangelo, our GM, stroke his ego. Trust in the process, but cautiously, is where we all should be at when it comes to drafting our number one picks in Philadelphia. And that's something that we should not have to do. We should be able to celebrate our number one picks and have the confidence that the organization has their best interest in mind. But this is where we are right now, Philadelphia sports, for the 76ers. So we're going to see. And hopefully it turns out well in our favor as fans.
True indeed. True indeed. What about you, Kent? Final thought.
I feel like I jumped the gun a little bit. I saw tonight while watching the game that the Astros have never won a World Series. I didn't know that.
And, go ahead and tell the truth. Go ahead and tell the truth that the Dodgers up by two going into the eighth inning.
They are. They are. They're up 3-1. And the reason why I'm saying this now, I don't know. We're closing the show. We don't know how this will end.
Right.
But it would be dope if the Astros actually won their first World Series, considering everything that happened in Houston this year. I like when teams break these type of records, like when Cleveland won their first, when Chicago won their first. I like that sort of thing, man. So, while I picked the Dodgers because I just, they were rolling and just being an analyst and trying to pick who's going to win the series. I picked them. But if I would have known that the Astros hadn't won a World Series before, I probably would have picked them in order to root for them, man. So if the Dodgers do end up losing this World Series, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that, man, because I think it's dope. I think it would be dope if the Astros captured their first World Series. I think that would be really, really dope. So, but, man, I also think that it would be dope if Kershaw finally got his ring, too. So I'm on both sides of the fence here. But I think the Dodgers have at least four World Series titles. And Magic Johnson on the team. So, I mean, the brother. So, I don't know, man. But Dodgers up 3-1. So we'll see what happens if they close this out. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
True indeed, man. It's looking like now again, by the time we the way this World Series has been going, anything can happen between now and the time we close out this podcast. My final thought is going to be on an announcement that was made that really didn't make a lot of headlines, but it probably should have. About a week and a half ago, there was an announcement made by the University of Virginia. The University of Virginia hired a new athletic director. And I know you're probably thinking to yourself, okay, well, why is that news? It is news because the new athletic director at the University of Virginia, her name is Carla Williams. She was currently the Georgia deputy athletic director at the University of Georgia. The cool part about it for me about this announcement of Carla Williams being named the AD at the University of Virginia is that she's a black woman. Not only is she a black woman, she's a 1989 graduate of the University of Georgia, while at the University of Georgia. She oversaw the Bulldogs football program. She was the, I guess, the second lieutenant to the AD, Greg McGarrity. She also had administrative responsibility for the women's basketball team, academic support, NCAA compliance, which is very key, external and event operations, human resources, sports medicine, strength and conditioning, and business operations. According to the filings in the United States Department of Education, those businesses operated and entailed monies that totaled $123.8 million in revenue in the 2015-2016 academic year, plus $116.6 million in expenses. And she ran all of that. In a day where, you know, a lot of stuff makes headlines, I think this should have been the top headline. Unfortunately, it wasn't. It was just a blip on the radar. But to have a Black woman who is, if I'm not mistaken, she is the only African-American woman of the 64 schools that compete in the Power Five conferences. She's only the fifth active athletic, she's only the fifth female athletic director in the Power Five school. So again, this is a big deal. And when we talk about equality, this is what equality looks like. And ironically, it comes at a place that has seen a lot of stuff here recently with the, you know, the Klansmen showing up in Charlottesville. This is a great story. Too bad it didn't make the headlines. So to Carla Williams, we salute you. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. For FIFO in his absence, for B's in his absence, got to thank the homie Q to Six Man for filling in, my boy Ken. I am your host, 12 Kyle. We'll catch you guys next week. Peace.